You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for March 4th, 2016. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the midnight screening of the GOP disaster flick, Bang the Dumb Slowly. It's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
And we've learned so much more about presidential candidates and their various banging abilities this week than I ever wanted to know.
I really didn't ever need to know what size Donald Trump's Cheeto was. but now I know. So that's exciting.
Well, or you don't know.
I don't know.
PolitiFact has rated 75 statements that Donald Trump has made during the debates as false.
Yeah.
So you don't know.
I do know.
But here's the question that I have.
Yeah.
That is related to Donald Trump's sex life, and I apologize.
I'm so scared of the subject right now, you have no idea, but please go ahead. Please proceed.
I apologize in advance.
Uh-huh.
Donald Trump, on his many appearances on the Howard Stern show, pointed out that he didn't pull out with his current wife because he trusts her so much, which means he was using the pull-out method at some point. And what I want to know is how many abortions did Donald Trump pay for in the 80s?
Okay. I wish you the greatest luck trying to find that out.
Well, somebody should ask the question.
Uh-huh.
Cavuto. It's cavutoing. You asked the question.
Yeah. I think we have moved so far beyond the place where I would expect anyone in any venue to ever ask Donald Trump another serious question.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Because
that's not a serious question either.
Well,
I'm not pretending that that's a serious question.
But now you raise an interesting point. This is a bit of a judo that Donald Trump used on his very good, dear personal friend, Megyn Kelly, yesterday. They're recording this on Friday morning because, we watched the goddamn debate, if you want to call it that. And
This is hazard duty for us because not only did we wait to record our podcast until Friday, but I have a cold.
She does.
And I've had a cold all week.
She's not.
I'm at about 85% at this point. We're going to plow through.
We're going to power through this. And if you need me to do all of the talking, I'm totally okay with that, right? I'll do all the work, baby.
Yeah, all right.
There was a moment where Donald Trump reminded his very close personal friend, Megyn Kelly, that they both used to go on the Howard Stern show.
Uh-huh.
We used to have a lot of fun. I was a regular guest in there, as were you, Megan.
Mm-hmm.
You want to bring that shit? That's fine. Let's talk about what you talked about on the Howard Stern show. Let's talk about your stripper posing for covers of magazines because Roger Ailes thinks you look hot that way. You want to go there? Let's all go because we're, everyone's a sinner on the stage and I'm the only one who is willing to say it out loud. So let's party, people. It was a ball to watch. It was horrifying, but it proved a lot of things sort of finally that we've been waiting to have proven in front of 50 million people for a long time on the left.
Mm-hmm.
But where would you like to start, my dear?
I'd like to start with Meghan McCain.
Okay.
If you don't mind,
no,
just because that's up on my screen right now.
Please.
Her tweet that said, "Every negative stereotype I have tried to combat for the last 8 years about Republicans has been utterly destroyed in the past 9 months."
It's like the incubation period for a baby. And you tried to get rid of that baby, didn't you, Meghan McCain?
Well,
you brought it to term, and now it's in front of you. It's your devil baby, bastard child.
And John McCain also gave support to Mitt Romney yesterday, of all people, and said, "We have to think about who should be commander-in-chief, and it should be Donald Trump." Mitt Romney's right.
This was a very odd combination of circumstances.
Well, I think I just want to say if her dad wasn't alive, I think she'd change parties.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, there's that. Mm-hmm. But a lot has come to fruition in the Republican epic poem that we are watching unfold.
Yeah.
Right now. And why don't we talk about that first? The three pillars of the Republican Party that we have known about for 20 years.
Yeah. It's
we're encapsulated on stage as if written by Homer.
Yeah.
Right.
This is a Homeric epic with a Marx Brothers patina.
It is.
Which is kind of amazing and wonderful in a horrible, horrible way. The Marx Brothers aspect, I talked about, you know, 2 weeks ago, which is Jeb Bush leaving is like Margaret Dumont leaving duck soup. I mean, you know, oh my God, what are we going to do without the straight man? You've got to have your fussy, officious representative of the upper class, clueless representative of the oligarchy, to tell the little people to obey their betters and shut up and quit behaving in a rambunctious way. And so Jeb left. I'm like, oh, that's too bad. What are we going to do? And look, it's Mitt Romney.
Because Central Casting has a couple of these guys waiting in the wings to come in and play that role.
Showed up right on cue. And it was perfect. Because this is something that it was weird, because Charlie Pierce and I apparently hit publish at the same moment. and he caught some things and I caught some things. I called it a Downton Abbey versus Mad Max. I also referred to the debate last night as the Kobayashi Maru, because it is the no-win scenario. There's no way the GOP can win anything. It's a total test of character, which they're failing. But Mitt Romney ambles onto stage. Mitt Romney comes on stage to tell the little people to shut up and get in line.
Mm-hmm.
The privileged son of George Romney calls out Donald Trump for having a rich daddy and having a privileged life. The speech that he quotes, because you have to, you know, you have to make obeisance to St. Ronald Reagan at the beginning and end of every sermon.
Absolutely.
But the speech he chooses to cite twice at the beginning and end was Ronald Reagan's A Time for Choosing speech, in which Ronald Reagan said, you should ignore the party hierarchy and the party bigwigs and vote for Barry Goldwater.
Exactly.
Vote for the crazy outsider, not the safe establishment choice. I'm like, fuck, did you even read this thing? Do you have any? And it was also the speech in which, one of the many speeches in which Reagan talks about what a disaster Social Security is and how Medicare is a commie plot. So, okay, that's great. That couldn't be more perfect. And it just went on like that. And it was the absolute staggering cluelessness of these rich cartoon characters who run the Republican Party. The Montgomery Burns, who runs the Republican Party, who has no fucking clue how ridiculous Mitt Romney, no clue how much the base hates Mitt Romney.
Hates him.
He lost to the Kenyan usurper. And that's all Donald Trump had to say. So,
well, and I ran a clip at Crooks and Liars yesterday for Throwback Thursday of the MSNBC crew after Chris Christie's speech at the 2012 Republican National Convention, where nobody on the stage was talking about Mitt Romney. And all these reporters, Rachel Maddow and all the crew at MSNBC, was saying, nobody's talking about Mitt Romney. No one is mentioning how excited they are about Mitt Romney. They are not selling this candidate to anybody.
No.
Chris Christie gave the keynote address in 2012.
Yeah.
And he talked for 10 minutes about himself, took a breath, said Mitt Romney's a great guy, took another breath and started talking about himself again. And that was it, the whole speech.
Yeah. Oh, it was it.
Even, and then Chris Matthews said even his wife couldn't warm him up.
Well, and getting back to your point, so you have Mitt Romney delivering the "You're finished at Faber, young men."
Yeah.
You know, Dean Wormer speech from Animal House
to
the people who hate him already. So that's brilliant. But to your point, the three pillars of the Republican Party for 20 years, liberals have been saying, "Look at the Republican Party. What do you see? Underneath this patina of respectability, it's just a mob of bigots and con men and theocrats and oligarchs. That's all they are." And
you had the three pillars. You had Donald Trump representing the bigoted white supremacist
con man
base, right?
And right next to him, at number two, The theocrat.
The theocrat who really believes, Ted Cruz believes the bullshit that's coming out of his mouth.
The unhinged batshit theocrat. And bringing up number three,
the puppet of the oligarchs.
It's look, this is what we've been saying for 20 years. Yep. And for 20 years, people like David Brooks, who wrote a column today that says essentially, thank God Mitt Romney's here to save us.
Yeah. And you predicted he was going to say that. You're very good at predicting exactly what David Brooks is going to write about.
I did. I yesterday I wrote that, and I'll quote because why wouldn't I? at Mitt Romney's speech, this was not a speech that was intended for me. And although one side effect of Mitt Romney's speech will be to give involuntary ruling class sympathy boners to people like David Brooks, it was not intended for Mitt's fellow entitled oligarchs either. Presumably, it was intended to sweet-talk the hoi polloi into once again sacrificing their dreams of greatness for another party-approved corpse. And the next day, David Brooks in the New York Times. Now, at long last, the big guns are being brought to bear. Now, at long last, some major Republicans like Mitt Romney are speaking up to lay waste to Donald Trump. And I don't know, you know, how much more perfectly you can demonstrate. It's a freaking science project. And here's the proof. Here is the absolute irrefutable evidence that we have been right all along and that these people at the top are completely clueless. The people you have made rich, rich beyond the dreams of Croesus, rich selling this lie about the Republican Party, while we in the wilderness have been saying, but it's not true. It's all bullshit. Look at who the Republican base really are. Just look. For fuck's sake, look. I don't have any confidence that this is going to happen. There's going to be some sort of great awakening or great awareness or sudden, you know, David Brooks is going to have some sort of senator, whatever his name was, Crane, at the end of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Senator Payne, that boy's right. He's right about everything. I'm an awful lying fraud. And that's never going to happen. They're smart enough just to hunker down and cover their eyes and pretend it's not happening until it blows over or something else comes along. But I really couldn't have scripted any better proof that liberals have been right all along as a demonstration project in front of millions of people than the Romney speech followed by the absolute bear-baiting lunacy that was the Republican debate.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't have gone better. Really.
Well, and the intro, too. Let's not forget Paul Ryan.
Yeah.
Party of Lincoln, Paul Ryan. Yeah. I don't think the Republican base ever, or the Republican establishment, or the donor class, or whatever, ever figured out how hurt and memorably pained the Republican base was by Paul Ryan's budget.
Yeah. Yep.
They never forgot that Paul Ryan wanted to cut Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah.
And that is how they see him. I remember I have a Republican relative, believe it or not, who we don't discuss politics, but I did overhear this person when Paul Ryan was announced as Mitt Romney's running mate say, "Oh, him." And sure enough, you know, that person is at retirement age, is retired, doesn't want anything to do with Paul Ryan. It's the same thing. And they don't see the lack of self-awareness within that group because of money.
Yeah.
I think it's because of money.
It is.
That they just don't see themselves as needing to face face facts, which is so funny because they insist that the party of Fox News and Rush Limbaugh must face facts, right? But they can't see that they're...
The irony that you've spent all this time teaching them not to face... Yeah, with great wealth comes great irresponsibility. And it is not that all wealthy people are irresponsible. I would never say that. Warren Buffett is a model of social responsibility and rectitude. George Soros, your checks still aren't clearing. I don't know why they're not coming to our house. Just send them the P.O. box. They'll get to us. Don't worry about it. But it is everything we've been saying. It is everything. I couldn't have scripted a better, more horrifying demonstration of how completely off the rails one of our two. It even broke poor Tom Friedman.
Yeah.
It took Donald Trump to finally break Tom Friedman. Don't worry, he will mend because
he will come back.
He will find a way to both sides.
He will double Davos down.
Yeah, he sure as shit will. He will go off to the mountains of Switzerland and come back with a new TED Talk and a new flat and a new book that a bunch of simpering, half-bright CEOs will buy in bulk and make their managers read because that's what he does. But he finally said, We can't get any of the stuff we need done as long as one of our two major political parties is nuts. I mean, he literally quoted me.
Mm-hmm.
And this is...
Without mentioning your name.
No, of course not. But this is one of the archdukes of both siderism. Going back to the Iraq War and before that, it was always both sides. It was always everybody's to blame. It was always, why can't we all get along? You know, this is one of the, you know, along with David Brooks, why can't we have a third party that's Joe Lieberman and John McCain? And mm-hmm. then I can jerk off to that till I go blind.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is their ideal. And their ideal peer in the Republican Party would be Mitt Romney, because he talks their language. He talks right. the privileged, completely fucking clueless language of someone who lives inside the castle, lives inside that
Well, can you talk for a minute? I'm not trying to switch gears here. I loved your play on words with the smarmy of Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
The counties inside the Beltway
yes.
did not vote the way the rest of Virginia did.
No.
I'd like you to talk about why.
No, they didn't. it was the Army of Northern Virginia. As you Walking Dead fans will refer to it as the Alexandria Safe Zone. These are the suburbs of Northern Virginia,
Washington D.C. suburbs,
which is the only place pretty much outside of Minnesota that young Marco, or as I refer to him, young Marco Rubio, did well.
Mm-hmm.
And as Chris,
the rest of Virginia went for Trump,
pretty much the entire state. And Mr. Chris Hayes of MSNBC, about which we will speak more in a few minutes, shrewdly noted that the reason for that is that's where the fucking lobbyists live.
Yeah.
That's where the professional class of consultants and campaign advisors and defense contractors and media elite and think tank people all live. The very people who have built Marco Rubio from scratch.
Yeah, they built this robot. They really did.
And they deeply believe in his ability to continue their stupid policies if they could just get him in the White House.
Talk about voting your self-interest. Yeah. That they want that puppet in office. Yeah. Absolutely. Yep.
And so I call it the Smarmy of Northern Virginia, because the Army of Northern Virginia was the last standing army of the Confederacy.
Yep.
And they were, and once the Confederacy had fallen, once it had been broken, Jefferson Davis, I pointed out that you could, if you squinted real hard, you'd be hard pressed to tell the difference between Jefferson Davis's final address to the people of the Confederacy and Marco Rubio's bizarre victory speech, having lost everything but Minnesota. His second mm-hmm. bizarre victory speech, having lost everything but Minnesota. In which, you know, Jefferson Davis celebrates that we're going to enter a new phase of the struggle, which will endure throughout all the ages and shed an increasing luster upon our country. And, you know, and relieved from the necessity of guarding cities and particular points, important but not vital in our defense, with an army free to move from point to point and strike in detail, hit the detachments and garrisons of the enemy. It's the idea that now that we've lost all of our cities and all of our land, now it's going to go really well for us.
Yep, yep.
And nothing can reverse us. Nothing will stand against us. We are going to go on forever. And if you just have the will and the belief, we will totally win this thing. And Marco Rubio, I'm sure, believes that, or at least projects that he believes that, because he has a mountain of goddamn money behind him, and he has all of the establishment douchebags who the base absolutely loathes in his corner. And Mitt Romney, to his, I think, deeply Machiavellian credit, didn't endorse anybody.
Yeah.
He just said, please keep dividing your vote among people. Please.
Yeah, so that I can come in, or one of my friends, and I think he means I can come in at the convention and save you all, because my wife really wants to be first lady. That's really what's going on.
If you adopt me, if you force me to, I will reluctantly come and be your leader for one. I will lead you to a glorious defeat one more time.
One more time, yes.
And watch.
Your thoughts, I want to switch gears. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm just saying blood will run in the streets.
Yeah.
If the people who have been told that their party is in the hands of plutocrats who don't give a shit about them are told, here's a plutocrat who will lead you to greatness.
Yeah.
And he's the guy who lost last time. There will be such a wailing And
well, and Cleveland is ordering riot gear.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people that I've been talking to on email today have said, is it for inside the convention center or outside the convention center?
Well, and I on the way to school with Junior Dude this morning,
mm-hmm.
I said, yeah, it's pretty horrible and it's tragic what happened to that party. And it could end very badly. We could end up with Donald Trump as president. We really could. I mean, I mm-hmm. hate to say it, but we really could. But as a civics lesson, pay attention, because this is fascinating stuff. This is the stuff of history. Pay attention mm-hmm. to what's going on here, because it's really worth remembering, even if, you know, you have to remember it as a historian of the rubble of this country.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great lesson in how democracy, the machinery of democracy, and how it can get broken by people yeah. who want to break it. If you're determined enough to screw this country up and you have enough money behind you, you can do it. And this is what it looks like when the gears start coming off and the wheels
yep.
start falling off.
This is what happens when oligarchy is resisted.
Yeah.
And I hate to say both sides, but really, this is the thing that actually went. I had a tweet and an email from a couple of people about something I said last week, that the Republican base does not like Citizens United
no.
any more than Democrats do.
Yeah.
And I heard back from a couple of people saying, I've never heard a Republican say that they don't like Citizens United. And I said, because the media doesn't want you to know that the Republican base doesn't like Citizens United. And they hide that because their network affiliates are the ones cleaning up
mm-hmm.
from Citizens United.
Yes.
The media is in on the game, and they are cleaning up and making millions upon millions of dollars.
Yes, they are.
Their budget for 4 years is covered by the sale of Super PAC ads.
And ads for the debates.
Yes,
these
exactly.
freak show spectacles that mm-hmm. used to be run by the League of Women Voters.
Right.
Yep.
Right. And now they're a reality show.
Mm-hmm.
We also got a lot of emails this week about Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Yes.
And her traitorous support of payday loan places.
Yeah. For money.
And
for money.
There's an article in Wonkat that says everyone's being a dick to Elizabeth Warren, including Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Yeah.
And I don't need to say anything to the listeners of the show about Debbie Wasserman Schultz. You guys know that she simply shouldn't be in the job she's in.
No.
And that's it. Jeez. Although I'm kind of jealous of you, Drip Glass. You got an actual envelope.
Yes.
From the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee with a membership card.
You mean I'm a card-carrying member?
You're a card-carrying official member of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee.
I am.
And I didn't get one.
Wow.
And
well,
I think
know.
It's because I told them to fuck off
yeah.
one too many times.
Yeah.
You just have to tell them to fuck off three more times and you'll be off their mailing list forever.
Are you kidding me? The free lunches, I will be stealing pizza and salads and croutons from them. We're going to
peanut butter sandwiches.
We're going to live off of them for a month. You know? No. I would like to say this about payday loan organizations.
Yes.
They are an absolute disgrace. You can tell
yep.
when a neighborhood's going bad, you can tell it because they pop up like cancer. And
well,
what they do is they literally extract the wealth of a community and ship it off to someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
They're the most parasitic byproduct of capitalism I can imagine outside of actual drug dealing and prostitution.
Well, and you and I have experience with a community that we live in
yep.
where activist city council people
uh-huh.
took it upon themselves to make sure these payday loan places did not expand.
Repent in. Uh-huh.
Repent in.
Yeah.
And it is interesting to me because this is a place where you can get varying constituencies
yeah.
to unite.
Yep.
And you can get small business people who are low tax, Republican, social Republican,
uh-huh.
social conservative, blah, blah, blah,
yep.
on the side of progressive community organizing liberals.
Yep.
And say, look, this is both a problem for poor people that we need to fix
mm-hmm.
and also a business problem in terms of urban blight and ugliness that deters commerce.
Well, and right? all of that money that's being drained out of the community is being drained away from the
your business.
Your business. You're losing economic vitality that you need to keep your restaurant open or your store open or your whatever open.
Yep.
You're exactly right. This is one of those issues that everybody should be able to get behind, except for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who's clearly in the pay of the worst people in America.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Paradoxically, this is exactly why I don't want Elizabeth Warren on the Supreme Court or to run for president.
Anywhere but where she is right now.
As Charlie Pierce says, we already have our Elizabeth Warren. You get your own.
Yeah.
I want her in the Senate.
Well, he's a Massachusettsian. That's
exactly,
the thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I want her in the Senate as a lion for the next 30 years. That's what I want. If I could clone her, I'd put her everywhere. But, quit sort of fantasy casting her in every possible government job you could think of. She's right where I want her to be. But, yeah, Debbie Wasserman Schultz has absolutely no business having her meaty hand on the scales of my political party, period, and siding with the worst scum in the world to gut regulation to protect the poorest people from the worst predators that was sponsored by one of the best and most enlightened people I know. How this woman is still in the Democratic Party is a mystery to me, much less running anything.
Mm-hmm.
But there you go. Democracy in action.
Driftglass, at the end of our podcast, as we're winding down, I want to get personal for a moment.
All right.
The other half of the everyone's being a dick to Elizabeth Warren story is about the Bernie supporters who blame her for the loss, the 2-point loss in Massachusetts on Super Tuesday.
The tie in Massachusetts.
Practical tie. Essentially a tie result in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And I want to bring this up as a personal concern, because at least two of our children are very passionately supporting Bernie Sanders, which means that I'm raising good liberal children.
And one of them will be voting in their very first election in 11 days.
Yeah, and actually gets to vote as a 17-year-old in the primary.
In 11 days.
Yeah. Right. So that's very exciting.
Uh-huh.
I am a little worried about them, our kids. About what happens if Bernie is not the nominee.
Yeah.
And it concerns me because you pull me away from social media.
Right, I do. I pry you away. Yeah.
And I see people on social media who are angry at both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton for changing their positions or evolving or however you want to put it.
Yeah.
And you do see this from both candidates' supporters.
Sure,
that,
of course.
Oh, look, Bernie did this 20 years ago, or Hillary said this 30 years ago, or so on. And when you just scratch the surface and go and look at the bios of the people that are saying that, these folks are young. And this is, I'm not being patronizing here. I want my kids and every kid who is supporting either one of these candidates to get involved and stay involved in the political process forever. And I don't think we're going to have a problem with our kids with that, because they have parents who will pick them up, dust them off, and say, guess what? We've got another cause to go fight for.
Yeah.
So get busy.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
not about Bernie Sanders. It's about the next thing.
Young is not fair. When this is your first rodeo.
When this is new,
You have every right to give your heart and soul to someone you believe in beyond all reason and have it completely broken and hate everyone and refuse and go to your room and cry and swear you'll never have your heart broken again. You have every right to do that. Absolutely, and no one should.
Do you remember your moment when you cried? Not cried probably, but
absolutely.
When you threw it all away?
Sure.
What was it for you?
Politically?
Yeah.
It was when I decided to vote for John Anderson.
Because
Jimmy Carter wasn't pure enough and Ronald Reagan was crazy. And I was not going to sully my skirts. I was not going to, I was going to stay pure.
Yep.
And it turned out.
For me, it was my dad called me. This was Ted Kennedy's speech at the Democratic National Convention, "The Dream Shall Never Die."
Uh-huh.
And it was that year, 1980.
Yep.
Same year. And Kennedy gave the speech, and I said, I'm not going to cry. Well, my dad was visiting family in Chicago, and he called the phone rang right after that speech.
Uh-huh.
And my dad, I picked up the phone and said hello, and my dad said, "Is there a dry eye in the house?"
Oh.
And I lost it. I just lost it. And 1980, I was exactly the age that Junior Jude is now. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. To the year. Mm-hmm. I was 17. So, yeah, okay. You get your heart broken. And it's hard because if you are too young to have evolved on anything, if this is if where you are politically is where is the only thing you remember
is right and true and, you haven't and virtuous.
Changed, and you haven't changed your position on anything because this is your first time right. having an opinion.
Yeah, and it's pure and perfect.
And it's pure and perfect.
Yeah. And it might very well be.
Then a 73-year-old senator who's had to react to everything from, you know, and yes, Bernie Sanders has been remarkably consistent, yes. but there are still places where he has voted in ways that people don't like.
Yes.
And Hillary Clinton has changed a lot.
And Bernie Sanders has pushed her bodily to the left.
Yep.
Which is, you know, is a great and noble thing in and of itself.
Yeah, and I loved what they said on The Daily Show and what a lot of other people have said, which is, you know, take a yes.
Yeah.
If someone agrees with you now, take a yes as a gift and hold them accountable.
Yeah.
Hold them accountable for what they're campaigning on now.
Well, can I tell you a joke?
Sure.
It's an old joke. I'll update it for modern purposes about how to break it to the kids about Bernie Sanders.
Oh, okay.
There's a joke about the so the guy who delivers the mail to the guys at the front line, comes up and says, here's a message from home. Your dog died. And the private loses it. He's heartbroken. He runs away. He's sobbing. And the sergeant takes this new kid aside who's delivering messages. He says, look, kid, there's a way to do this. All right. There's a way to do this. This guy doesn't know what's happening. He's far away from home. So here's what you do. First, you tell him, look, your dog's up on the roof and we can't get him down. And then we tell him, you know, it doesn't look like your dog's going to be able to get down. The fire department's here. And you, over the course of a few days, oh, it doesn't look good. The dog fell off the roof. And you sort of ease him into it. You know, you don't just hit him with that all at once. There's a way to do this, and it's kind and it's diplomatic, et cetera. And he says, do you think you understand, kid? Higgins says, yeah, I think I do. He says, is there any of the mail, Sarge? Any of the mail, kid? He says, yeah, Sarge. Bernie Sanders is up on the roof, and we can't get him down.
That's terrible.
It is. And actually, it's your mom is up on the roof. Your dad's up on the roof.
But
the point being, it's a very, very, very old joke about breaking bad news to people and doing it really badly. So I hope I made at least some of our listeners laugh. and some of them hate me, but...
Some of them hate us now because we sound like we're being defeatist, and I'm not.
No.
This campaign isn't over yet.
No.
The math does not look good for Sanders. Like, everybody knows that, and Sanders is not stupid.
No.
And I have watched where he is spending his money, where he is spending his time, and particularly in Illinois, I'm not seeing a candidate who is looking for votes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say this as a criticism of Bernie Sanders, someone who I am a liberal who supports Bernie Sanders and what he stands for.
Drinking out of a Bernie Sanders mug right now.
Right now.
No kidding.
No kidding. He's got a Bernie Sanders coffee mug. Mm-hmm. In his hand. Mm-hmm. All right. Bernie Sanders is not spending his time and money and energy in Illinois in a way that is designed to get votes. Mm-hmm. He is spending his time and energy and money in Illinois in a way that gets photo ops of huge crowds.
Yeah. Which is,
and that's a different ball of wax because going down to Edwardsville, Illinois.
Yeah.
And part of this is I'm mad he's not in Springfield yet.
Yeah, you too.
I will admit that. Mm-hmm. But Edwardsville,
is a college town.
Which you haven't heard of, I'm sure, if you're outside of Illinois, is not only a college town, it's a college town outside of St. Louis.
Yeah, where I've done public speaking, actually.
Yeah, it's not an Illinois center. I mean, it is a college town for Illinois, but it's not – the crowds that are going to come aren't going to be entirely from Illinois. They're going to be from St. Louis.
Well, it also has an additional feature in that a lot of people there are losing their jobs because the Republican governor of Illinois won't approve a goddamn budget, won't budge, won't compromise, which is a great opportunity for him to go and talk about the unions and employment and what it happens when you put Republicans in charge of things. So it's a great platform for him. It's a great speaking opportunity for him. I hope
the photo ops of huge crowds will be there.
There's
no doubt about that.
Uh-huh.
But that does not mean that you're doing a get out the vote that you're using your candidate, let me put it that way. And there is a lot of, you know, on the ground activism, but without the candidate appearing, maybe I'm just mad that he hasn't scheduled a visit to Springfield yet.
And speaking of that, we'll put up a link to Samantha Bee's explanation of why
the 2010 election, which I'm sure a lot of people have seen already, but yeah, we'll put up a link to that. The 2010 election, the most important election you slept through.
Yeah.
That was very good.
It was. Very good. A timely reminder about, I don't want to go vote. I'm not enthusiastic.
Well, and Bob Seska had a very good article at the Banter about that, that it's voting is your responsibility. Yeah. It's like flossing, okay? You have to do it. And it's not about being inspired. You know, no one should have to carry you on a wave of enthusiasm to do your duty to your country. You go and vote. So that sounds harsh, but it's true. Mm-hmm. It really is.
You want to talk a minute about Peter Beinart's latest stupid idea or no?
I'd rather talk about MHP.
Oh, yeah. Oh, let's do that. Absolutely. My God.
We want to...
Invite?
We would like to mourn the passing of Melissa Harris Perry's show and how she was treated by the network and her resilience. We'd like to celebrate her resilience.
Treated like shit. Treated shabbily and like shit for doing her job.
Yep.
And
we'd love to have her on the podcast.
We would. And you know what? She didn't sign a non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah.
She put up a series of tweets about her leaving the former liberal network of MSNBC, and it was brutal, man. She told stories out of school that everyone I know suspected. You know, it doesn't require a genius to look at the product that network produces and notice it's gone from sort of liberal filet to right-wing trash and see that the heavy hand of Phil Griffin and the corporate interests of Comcast and Andy Lack are stripping them of every vestige of their liberal past, except for a couple of token liberals they keep on in the evening to pretend that that's not what's going on. And Melissa Harris Perry sent a tweet out after her dismissal, apologizing to some of her friends for succumbing to the culture of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine that. MSNBC... the culture of fear that you're not allowed to talk about what's clearly going on inside your own network. And the same day that they take this very intelligent, extremely interesting, nourishing weekend show, the last vestige of the grand weekend experiment that they launched years ago, and just trashed her. The same day they got rid of her, they brought in Ted Cruz's hitman, Rick Snyder, on the payroll at MSNBC.
Who was fired.
Who was fired.
By Ted Cruz.
Fired by Ted Cruz for lying too much. Imagine wrap your heads around that. So the day that they kick her to the curb, they bring in this lying scumbag. And this morning, just as a little bit of context, as I was flipping past the Morning Joe show, there he is mocking MSNBC, you know, first of all, mocking Marco Rubio for complaining about Fox News. I've never seen a network more in the tank for anybody than they were for Marco, except maybe MSNBC. I remember how much they used to, they just Barack Obama, you know, they would just, oh, Hillary Clinton, no, it's all racism. Everything's about racism. Then he breaks into a horrible Keith Olbermann impersonation. Racism is dawning over. Every time anything bad happened to Barack Obama, it's always racism. And Hitler, Bush is Hitler. I'm like, you know what? You just fired Melissa Harris Perry for doing less than that. But Morning Joe, that right-wing douchebag and his lineup of hacks and liars, is the future of MSNBC. Liberal media is dead. So get over it, get used to it, and come back to the Professional Left Podcast once a week where we'll explain these
things. I was going
to
say, it's good, great news for the Professional Left Podcast and other liberal podcasts, because you can get your news analysis and punditry from real liberals.
Yeah, who's, you know, we're sitting in front of a microphone in front of a closet for
in the middle of a cornfield.
In the middle of a cornfield for acoustical purposes. But we love what we do, and we do it every week, and we love hearing from you. I mean,
we do love hearing from you, and the money we make, we are very, very grateful for. I imagine it's about a fourth of what Ted Cruz staff, former Ted Cruz staffers get for sitting on MSNBC. Yeah. But
well,
life is unfair. That's just the way that is. Yeah. But listen, we are grateful for your contributions. Thank you for everything you do for us. We appreciate it. Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Olive. And Olive doesn't appear to be fitting exactly in the box she's sitting in, but don't mention that to her, please. Her personal motto is, if I fits, I sits, and sometimes even if I don't. Her hobbies include blocking doorways, demanding an increase in her rations, and viciously attacking artificial mouse-like objects, though she's completely uninterested in actual mice. Okay. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us, and that's also where you send your submissions to Science Fiction University, 4 paragraphs of a beginning of a short story, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go, Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And we heard from some Taekwondo people in New Jersey that they are not espresso-based beverage people, but they were happy to support our podcast. And I want to say hi to them because they had a fantastic picture of the fam in their mail, and it was wicked fun to hear. Get that. Thank you.
We're glad they're on our side.
Absolutely. It's good to have Taekwondo people on your side. You need that.
You do.
Don't forget our Amazon link at our website. You know, Driftglass, I was checking out what people are buying on Amazon using our link.
Tickets to Canada?
No, could be. Interestingly enough, vitamins.
Huh.
A lot of people buy vitamins on Amazon, and I went and looked at what they were buying, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's a lot cheaper to buy your vitamins on Amazon than to buy them from a chain pharmacy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah, way to go.
Because, I mean, that's, you're not impacting the local economy.
No.
You know, if you have a local pharmacist who is locally owned and not a chain, please buy your vitamins from that person.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
But if you buy them at, you know, a big box store or a chain pharmacist,
right,
you might save some money by using our link and then buying them from Amazon. And then for no extra money, you are making a contribution to the show.
You are.
Yep. So believe it. We believe in buying local. We also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a chain or a big box store. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution. You can, too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are going to spend the entire weekend binge-watching season 4 of House of Cats.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the flower and the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2016, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
All right, Science Fiction University, Dogface Herman. Don't forget, we are still accepting submissions to our short story, first 4 paragraphs workshop. We've received, I think, 5 or 6 so far.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not a contest.
It's not a contest, and everybody gets, you know, the Marco Rubio participation prize for joining in with this. We will read all of them on the air. We're going to pick in the order received. So you won't have, like I said, it's not a competition.
No, it's a workshop, the story
and
workshop.
We will do 2 or 3 every week until we're done with these.
Yeah.
The deadline, let's put a deadline on this, next Wednesday.
Yeah, it seems fair.
For this round, you'll have to have them to us by Wednesday, March 9th, end of day.
Yes.
End of business day, Wednesday, March 9th. And then we'll have another assignment later in the spring and do it again and have fun with it.
I'm glad you said end of business day, because the end of our day usually is
11:30.
Late. Go to bed. I don't want to go to bed. I need water. I
got a bed.
I need something signed, and I forgot to do my homework. Oh, really? Okay. Anyway, back to the real world. Science Fiction University.
Yes, Dogface Herman has sent us a quiz, Driftglass.
Okay.
And we're going to do this one today.
All right.
These are science fiction tropes. And trope is a very good word.
What does trope mean, Blue Gal?
Trope is something that is seen frequently, something that you would recognize as a repeated theme, repeated activity, repeated, yes, it's a familiarity thing.
Hey, look, it's a cowboy in a white hat. I wonder what he's doing.
Yeah,
yes.
That's a trope.
Yes, and there's nothing wrong with them. They can become cliches very quickly.
Yeah, but you have to be careful.
It helps your audience. You don't have to explain a lot of backstory if you can use the symbols and tools of the genre correctly. So they're just fine.
Right. And it is okay to have those kind of shortcuts to help your readers understand your story.
And sometimes it's fun to break them.
Oh, but, yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so what do we
got?
What do we
got? We've got six of them.
All right.
Identify the clip and then tell us what the trope is. Number one.
Tell me. You ever dance with the devil by the pale moonlight?
Man, let's go! Let's go, Jack!
See you around there.
I don't know who that could possibly be. that would be Batman.
Yes.
Obviously. But, And this, I'm lifting sort of from Unbreakable by M. Night Shyamalan, his only other good movie, which is he has a lot of fun with comic books. And it's the fact that every hero is related to the villain in a lot of different ways. They're both the same in a lot of ways. They might like each other in a different social setting. They're equal. They're exactly the opposite of each other in some way. And one gave rise to the other in some way.
It's a doppelganger kind of thing. Yeah. Yes, evil twin. The villain is a mirror to the hero. Uh-huh. Yes, equal and opposite.
And often one creates the other. One initiates the circumstances that leads to the creation of the other, which, you know, it's wonderful. I mean, it works really well. It creates a dynamic, dramatic tension right off the bat.
And that's one of the beauties of the Batman movie with the Joker, with Heath Ledger's Joker, that that character recognizes that Batman can't exist without him and he can't exist without Batman. Yeah. That there's
you complete me.
You complete me, yes.
Yeah. It really they understood that. And in pretty much every great comic book, there's a wonderful speech in the end of Kill Bill, if you like comic book speeches, about the difference between Superman and every other comic book hero that's worth reading, worth hearing. I'll give you the quick version of it if you'd like.
Sure.
Superman is different from every other comic book hero in that Superman is the identity. Clark Kent is the disguise instead of the other way around. Superman was born Superman.
Yes.
Batman was born. Bat was born. Bruce Wayne and has to put on a costume, or have something happen to him.
Mm-hmm.
Superman was born Superman. He is.
Yep.
His name is. You know. He's Jor-El or Kal-El. Jor-El rather. Kal-El. I'll get that right. And therefore, Clark Kent is his disguise. Clark Kent is how he sees us. That's his his covering, his camouflage. So how does Superman see the human race? As weak, as cowardly, as nearsighted. And that is Superman's critique of the human race. I thought that, if for nothing else, the movie was kind of fun because that was Quentin Tarantino having his comic book nerd moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Gosh. All right, number two.
Thing is, we could liaison this. The serial killer, I could be like your liaison with the police.
Right, I can see the mistake. You think because we showed up at this scene of crime, we're out to catch the killer.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, nothing to do with us.
Then what were you doing there?
Testing the glove. We need murder victims, simple as that. The glove only works on the recently deceased, and the more violent the trauma, the stronger the resurrection. All we need is fresh meat.
No, you were asking that man, John Tucker. I saw you. You were asking him about his killer.
He'd just been murdered. What else are you going to ask?
You could get an ID. You could help.
We're busy.
And your work is more important.
Now you got it.
Well, that's tough shit, because if you let me go, then I have a duty. I can tell them what you've got, because that glove could help us.
If you remember.
What do you mean?
How's your drink?
Have you poisoned me?
Don't be so dramatic. It's an amnesia pill. My own recipe with a touch of denial and a dash of retcon. Wake up tomorrow morning, you'll have forgotten everything about Torchwood. Worse still, you'll have forgotten me. Which is kind of tragic.
Oh, okay. This is either the Arrow or Torchwood.
It's Torchwood.
Okay, all right. Because it's Captain Jack. Mm-hmm. The same actor who plays that, or could have been Doctor Who, I suppose. Torchwood, which is an anagram for Doctor Who. The trope could be the secret benevolent organization behind the scenes that is working for the good of humanity.
Mm-hmm. Darkface Terman says it's retcon or retroactive continuity.
Yeah, okay.
Where a new storyline overrides old information. I also think this clip highlights the sidekick trope.
Yeah.
Because the female character in this is saying, look, I'll be your go-between between you and the cops.
Yeah.
And I'll be the human that takes care of, you know, the normal person who goes to the cops and talks to them for you. And he says, oh, no, that's not what we're here for. So that is a way of turning that trope on its head, which it often works, as you say.
I've also, in our political podcast, I might bring this up a little more fully. I've used retcon as a trope, as an explanation for how the Republicans have explained away all of the crap that's now coming down out of the sky that they don't mm-hmm. want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
That never happened. That never went. And they're constantly having to rewrite their own past to maintain retroactive continuity with the bullshit they're saying today. But that's just...
The Ku Klux Klan is a liberal organization.
That's right. Oh, my God. So... It happens in real life, not just
yeah,
in the,
it sure does.
In the movies.
All right, let's try this one. Number three.
Our story begins where it left off. Here, among that certain class of planets where we find Stingray Sam and the Quasar Kid in pursuit of a man named Fredward. Like every icon of every great economic power, Fredward was well protected. He lived in a grand fortress above the law where no man dare enter without an invitation. It was because of this that no security system was maintained, making it possible for Stingray Sam and the Quasar Kid to gain entrance.
Oh, that's, who the hell is that? The voices are really familiar.
This is a movie called Stingray Sam.
Yeah. Well, you have to, you know, there's always a lair. A terrible, dark, awesome lair.
Yeah.
Usually under a volcano or on a planetoid or made of some impenetrable material or invisible that we have to sneak into. And it's usually a band of misfits. It's Robin Hood sneaking into the castle. And somehow they always manage to do it. It's getting into the Death Star. There's always a way in. And our heroes always find it.
I would really like to see this movie. It's stars Corey McAbee and David Hyde Pierce. I guess that's the voice you recognize.
Yeah. Nice.
A dangerous mission reunites Stingray Sam with his long-lost accomplice, the Quasar Kid. These two space convicts earn their freedom in exchange for the rescue of a young girl who is being held captive.
Mm-hmm.
There's a trope for you.
Yeah. Find the girl.
Find the girl.
Rescue the princess.
God.
Rescue the princess and save the rebels. Yeah.
And destroy the Death Star.
And destroy the Death Star. It never fails.
Yep. And those stories work because that plot device is familiar.
Yeah. If you are writing for science fiction,
if you do it well,
don't worry about using the reason they're there is because they work. Just make sure your take on it is fresh and interesting.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, number four.
Your shoulder's going to be fine. The round went through nice and clean.
You shot me.
Yes, I did. You didn't give me much choice.
Where are we?
We're in Farmington, New Mexico.
in Mexico?
We've just driven 2 days across country. I had to put you out to let the side effects of the psychosis abate. This is Albert Hosteen. He's been translating your files.
You're lucky she's a good shot.
Or a bad one.
Oh, that's the X-Files.
Correct.
And the deep conspiracies that surround us and the right below the surface. You can't see them, but we can with these special glasses.
Actually, in this particular clip, Dogface Sherman says, it's just a flesh wound.
Oh, yeah. It's always just
he
a flesh
wound. He gets shot, and then the next day he's chasing after an alien.
Sure.
You know, it's...
Wound schmoon. Yeah.
And we were talking the other day about this with a person of interest.
Yeah, yeah.
The man in the suit always gets shot in the same spot. It's in the armpit.
Okay.
You know, it doesn't do any damage. His range of motion is fine.
He's fine.
His heart's fine. His lungs are fine. He just gets, you know, grazed in the shoulder a little bit. There's a lot of blood, but... Everything, and it's like you could use the same bloody shirt over and over again because he always gets shot right in that particular place. Very funny.
The arrow does that too. Somehow it's an in and out wound.
Yeah.
Don't worry. It's a meat shot. Don't worry.
Yeah. Next week he'll be fine.
He's fine. Look at that. Yeah.
All right. Number five.
San Helios City.
That's amazing. But. You've seen this sort of thing before, haven't you?
Thousands of times.
That lordship of yours, the lord of where exactly?
Of time. I come from a race of people called Time Lords.
You're an alien?
Yeah. But you don't have to kiss me either.
You look human.
You look Time Lord.
Well, sex with aliens. Got it.
Sex
you know,
with
boom.
Aliens.
Boom, gotta have that. And there's nothing weird about it.
This is Doctor Who.
And aliens are perfect. Because
they did say Time Lord in this clip, by the way. That was a pretty easy one.
Yeah. I'd call it Time Lord. When I come up to see my TARDIS, that's the line. It always works. It always works on every planet. And the alien's the perfect person to have sex with because they're leaving.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be weird. It's going to be memorable. You'll have stories. And then they leave. So it's perfect.
Unless you want a commitment.
You know. No, that's apparently you don't know 13-year-old boys like I
know. No, no, I do know. I know a 17-year-old boy.
Yeah.
All right. And Dogface Herman says, "What are the odds that an alien race would look human?"
100%. Don't they know the theory of panspermia? That I think it's William Shatner is the progenitor of all races in the universe because he had sex with everything throughout all space and time, so everything looks like. You know, Shatner's kids.
Everything has 10 fingers and 10 toes.
Yeah. And a hairpiece, apparently.
And a hairpiece, yes. All right, last one, number six.
All right.
Hey, ooh, look what I'm doing. Look at that. I'm putting 150 right on the table. Who's in with me, huh?
I don't have 150, now do I? If I did, I would plunder my mother's silverware.
It's a waste of money. You know who doesn't think it's a waste of money? Little Mr. Captain Amazing.
Well, Captain, if we had a billionaire like Lance Hunt as our benefactor, yeah, we could spend 150.
That's because Lance Hunt is Captain Amazing.
Oh, don't start that again. Lance Hunt wears glasses. Captain Amazing doesn't wear glasses.
He takes them off when he transforms.
That doesn't make any sense. He wouldn't be able to see.
Well, that's, I mean, that's, it's wonderful. Whatever this is, that's wonderful because it really is. Yeah, with a hint of mascara and a small mask, you can disguise your identity. Really? It's weird.
This is a 1999 movie called The Mystery Men, another one that I missed, with Ben Stiller and an amazing cast. It's got Janine Garofalo. It's got a whole bunch of people in it. I'm going to check that one out.
Yes.
But it's a superhero movie turned on its head. And yes, you know, once he puts the glasses on, no one recognizes him.
No one notices that Diana Prince is... jugs are just the same size as Wonder Woman.
Yeah,
it's weird. Let me check those out, Diana. No.
Don't touch. Anyway, thank you very much, Dogface Herman. Next week we will be starting to read the introduction to stories from our listeners,
complete with critiques. I will not be grading them, but I will.
We're gonna no rating, but we're gonna do recall and talk about them and see what works.
Yep.
And I'm looking forward to it. People are having fun with these. The ones that I've read so far.
Yeah.
It's very writerly, and writers are having fun, and that's what we like to see.
And we did actually. We got a question about why we do this particular portion of our show.
Oh, we do Science Fiction University because it's Driftglass's obsessive interest.
Because I wasted my youth reading trash science fiction novels. Also, we sort of got into this because it turned out that a whole lot of the stuff that science fiction nerds like me were reading in the years gone by were in many ways highly predictive of things that are not specific things, but trends that were happening.
And science fiction then becomes a part of our conversation about politics. Yeah. And so then we thought, you know, it evolved. Yeah. It evolved into this.
It was escapist literature, my ass. You know, look at what was predicted in the Space Merchants in 1954. And we went through a lot of that. And it really is a lot of really smart people in science fiction thought, geez, I wonder what would happen if the advertising industry just took over the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. And the predictions were startlingly accurate. So then we moved into, and it was my obsessive, and is my obsessive interest, one of them anyway. And it's a writerly thing, and we do a lot with language on our show. We believe we are giving our readers a vocabulary with which they can help them understand their world. And writing is a really good entree into that discussion. So it was a good question, and I thought we'd answer it. Anyway.
Two other things I wanted to mention.
Sure.
One is that you and I watched the Ghostbusters trailer yesterday.
Yeah.
And we're disappointed.
We were. For all we know, it might be the greatest movie of of the next year. But the trailer was like, wow, you really played that safe. You really
did. Yeah, and that was the conclusion I came to is they put four women in the roles, which was the most daring thing you could possibly do.
Right.
So the rest of the decisions we made are going to be completely safe.
Right.
And we're going to be use stereotypical characters, and it's not going to be that funny. And at least from the trailer, they're wasting a lot of talent.
And they're really funny women. I mean, there are lots. I mean, this is maybe a golden age of comedians. This is female comedians, long overlooked and long shoved aside, are really dominating a lot of. And you got four of the funniest people I could imagine.
You got four of the funniest women on earth.
Yeah.
And the trailer just looks like you.
What's wrong with you? Again, might be wrong, might be a great movie. The only addition I would make, I would make two additions to this movie. I've told you about this before. One would be Ron Funches would be the secretary.
Yeah.
I got to leave at 4.
I got to leave at 4 to be home by 4:20.
4:20, if you know what I mean. There's a lot of traffic, a lot of cross-town traffic, because Ron Funches is just friggin' hilarious.
He is just friggin' hilarious.
And I would have made this the Ernie Hudson story. That
Ernie Hudson sitting on a porch telling the story of the real Ghostbusters were all women, right?
No, the real Ghostbusters were his idea. But, you know, a brother can't get a break in this world, so we had to invent this cover story that these other guys were the actual Ghostbusters, and I just sort of came along and was a sidekick. But it was all my idea. And I'm passing that knowledge along to you ladies now, because I'm about to meet my maker. And then he goes to heaven and becomes Ghostbuster in heaven, or whatever. But there are lots of things they could have done. They might be doing a great job, but it's a pity to see such talent go to waste.
Yeah, yeah. And then I know we mentioned this before. We mentioned a list of books that were coming out. And I have started to read The Last Time Accidents by John Ray, W-R-A-Y, and I am loving it. It's just terrifically written, and I'm laughing all the way through, and it's brilliant. So I'll put a link up to that book over at our Facebook page. It is really a very well-written book. So.
Well, there you go. Read it, people.
Hey, thank you, Dogface Herman.
Thank you, Dogface Herman.
Looking forward to next week in Science Fiction University. Thank you, Driftglass. I love you.
I love you too, baby. Bye.
Bye.